Hi everyone. I am so excited for today's episode because we are talking all about finance today. This is something that I get DMs about every week. I have started to share more about my finance journey on social media, which, don't get me wrong, was extremely scary at first to talk about my finances online to thousands of people. But I've been talking about how I earn money as a side hustle, as well as how I'm approaching paying back my student loans and educating myself about that. But I obviously am not an expert in this topic, so I decided to bring an expert on to answer all of your finance questions, especially finance related to the medical community. So today we have Dr. Justin Jones, also known as Simple Finance Community on Instagram. He is a pediatric critical care physician. In 2021, he started Simple Finance Community, which aims to provide simple, accessible, and inclusive financial education with the goal of helping healthcare workers learn to budget, pay off debt, invest, and reach financial independence. So in this episode, we talk about how to make a budget in your pre-med years in medical school, the different medical school loans there are, how to invest, as well as mindset around money too. I cannot wait for you all to hear it. Hey there, welcome to The Honest MD. I'm your host, Kelly from Hey Kelly Ellen. Tune in every week for solo episodes and conversations with leaders in medicine all about navigating pre-med life, medical school, residency, medical careers, and more. But that's not all. We are all about being honest here. I'm going to be sharing the ups and downs of life both inside and outside of medicine. Because we all know that while we love medicine, it is not our whole life and we are so much more than our careers. So make sure you're ready to learn. Let's dive in. Okay, thank you so much for listening to another week of the Honest MD podcast. I'm very, very excited because I have Dr. Justin Jones here today, and I'm going to give him the stage and let him introduce himself.
Hey, Kelly, thanks so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and excited to talk about personal finance together. My name is Justin. I'm originally from the Southeast, but live in California now, and I'm a pediatric critical care doctor and have been really passionate about learning and sharing with others personal finance and the ways in which they can grow and learn financial literacy in order to prepare for their financial future. And I think it's something that particularly folks in medicine are, it's a big area of need there, and really looking forward to this conversation. So.
Definitely. I'm really excited about this because I would say that I consider myself like a beginner when it comes to personal finance. And I think the reason that I started like getting interested in this is because I'm about to graduate from medical school, and the reality of the fact that I now have like loans to actually think about and like a salary that I need to like actually manage and like spend my money like responsibly and everything like that. And I also feel like on my own social media, as well as I'm sure on your platform, I get a lot of messages from students who just are really confused when it comes to like personal finance, specifically like in the medical space. So I'm so glad that we have you here today to talk about that. So I definitely want to get to that. But first, I just wanted to talk a little bit about how you like decided to become a pediatric ICU doctor, because I think my audience would be very upset if I didn't ask you about that, because I know a lot of people like are really interested in the ICU and everything like that. So if you could share a little bit about that, that would be great.
Yeah, absolutely. More than happy to. I would say my journey to medicine in general has been pretty non-traditional. I kind of started college thinking about doing other things with my life, and spent a year abroad in India and had the privilege of living there for a year in college, and started to think about ways that I could really make a practical difference in people's lives, a very tangible physical difference, and started thinking about medicine. And I didn't like basic sciences too much in college. And so I took a couple years out of college, after college, and worked in refugee resettlement for a couple years as a social worker. And then kind of came to the realization that I, you know, really wanted to be able to meet people's practical, tangible needs in the healthcare sense, and that it's a really transferable skill globally, and that it's something that, that, you know, is really practical and you can offer people and really meet some important needs in that way. And so started my journey through med school and decided I wanted to do pediatrics. I really enjoyed working with kids. And then during my pediatrics training, I really found that I enjoyed the medicine in the ICU. I think it's a really fascinating place where you see so many concepts of medicine come together. And beyond that, I think it's a really meaningful place to be, meeting families in some of their most difficult and dark times. And being able to walk through that with them is a privilege in ways I can't honestly describe. It's a really beautiful privilege to be a part of that. And so it's just a really great meeting of medicine and physiology, along with being able to have deep and meaningful relationships with people and my patients. So
this is at like the perfect time, because I'm literally like on my ICU rotation right now, and I've seen I just am like in awe of ICU doctors, because not only like are you guys like the smartest people when it actually comes to like knowing the science and the physiology and like ventilator settings, like that's like over my head. I try to learn that, but then also you are all just such great like communicators. And I think that is just a really, it's hard. It's a hard skill. Like I can't imagine what it's like in pediatrics, like because I'm doing just the adult ICU, but just being able to like talk to families like at their lowest, like you said, it's definitely something that I admire a lot. And then thanks also for sharing about like your journey and kind of your non-traditional path, because I think that's also something that students like worry about, like that they maybe veered off or maybe they had a different career before. And it's like reassuring to know that you can become a doctor like no matter where you start, and I'm sure like the experiences that you had probably have like made you an even better doctor.
Absolutely. I think, you know, granted, I think that my life has come with a certain degree of privilege, but I do think that I've been a person who has been passionate about pursuing the things that interest me at the time that they interest me. And, you know, if something comes up that's of interest to me, I've never been a person that's, you know, I'm going to be a doctor and this is the direction I'm going to go, and there's nothing that's going to deter me. I've kind of pursued my interests along the way. And in many ways, I feel like that has only been a help and not a hindrance. And so, I think that, yeah, a lot of people do worry about taking time out or doing something that's not in medicine for a period of time before they decide to go into it or whatever the case may be. And in my personal experience, it's been something I've not regretted whatsoever. So
definitely. I try to tell people that, because I took 2 like years off before medical school too. And I feel like I like don't regret them at all. Like maybe during like when I was actually living those years, it was stressful because there's always like the question of like, will I get into medical school? Like it's not a guarantee, but looking back on it, I feel like that you can grow like so much more as a person when you like take time and you're not just like a student constantly.
Absolutely.
So thanks for sharing a little bit about like your background and your journey towards being an ICU doctor. And I'm curious how you got interested in personal finance at all. Like what made you kind of have this passion?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thanks for asking. I will say that, you know, growing up, I was taught kind of the basics of it's important to save money. And that's kind of where I got in my personal finance journey growing up, and didn't really have an understanding or a concept or framework to work off of. And, you know, my parents, they're both nurses, and I saw them, you know, working and paying bills and, you know, helping us go through school and those types of things, but I didn't really have an understanding of what it took to, you know, reach financial goals or what even investing was or an emergency fund or how to budget. I just kind of, you know, saw my parents doing those things. And it, similar to you, it kind of came about for me when I was in my fourth year of med school and realized I was graduating with hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt. And I had no idea what to do with it. And it was very scary and terrifying for me. And so I kind of resolved that I was going to learn what I needed to do about it and learn to develop the understanding and the skills to be able to manage my money effectively. And honestly, it's very simple when you do learn it. It seems really intimidating and complicated. And, you know, there are people out there who like to get into the weeds and the really like complex nitty gritty things. And really to be successful, it's a few basic things. And I think that, you know, that journey started for me, when I was about to finish med school and then continue through residency. And I took a couple years out after residency and worked as an attending before coming back to fellowship, and had the opportunity to work with residents and other colleagues and talk about, you know, money, and saw that a lot of people were sharing the same struggle and questions and uncertainty. And so it kind of grew over that course of time into a passion and something that I felt was a big need, especially for people in the medical community. So,
yeah, it sounds like you're someone who just kind of figure it like towards like kind of like me towards the end of medical school, where you had this kind of realization like, oh, now it's getting real, and then you actually put in the work and started to look things up, mm-hmm. and started to do your research and become like an expert in this space. And I'm actually really excited to talk with you more about this, because mm-hmm. I would say that like I consider myself like a pretty much like a beginner when it comes to the personal like finance space and like mm-hmm. investing and budgeting and stuff like that. And I think a lot of people who are listening are probably also beginners. Mm-hmm. And I put up like a question box on my Instagram, like asking like people what questions they had, and there were lots of similar questions. So I think people don't realize like that you're all like, a lot of people are in the same boat, mm-hmm. and a lot of people are wondering the same things. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to kind of go over some of the questions that I got. So a lot of my followers on my page are pre-meds, mm-hmm. or like people who had just been accepted to medical school, mm-hmm. and they're about to start medical school, and they're signing up, and then they realize, oh, I have to pay tuition somehow, mm-hmm. and want to take out loans. Mm-hmm. What advice do you have when it comes to medical school loans, with like even just like the basics of what is a loan, mm-hmm. and what advice could you give to people who are about to embark on their medical school journey and take out loans?
Yeah, that's a really great question. Unfortunately, loans are a very big part of graduate school, and particularly in the healthcare fields with medicine. And I think that it's really important to kind of have a basic understanding of the type of loans that are available to you. And so there are federal loans and there are private loans, I think, are the two biggest buckets that you can think of. And mm-hmm. Federal loans, obviously come through the federal government. Those are the kind that you get through your FAFSA and filling out your loan applications online. And they're the most common type of loans that people are going to have. And federal loans, I think it's important to understand that they have some built-in protections that come with them in some ways. And so as you graduate and you move forward, you have the options of, you know, public service loan forgiveness and those types of things through federal loans. And I think that recognizing that with federal loans, you have, excuse me, I'm losing my train of thought here.
You're fine.
Just like got distracted by a dump truck going by. So with federal loans, some of the things that are built into them are, you know, if you have a hardship and you're not able to work, or in the certain situation we are now with COVID, there's an option of forbearance and kind of putting those things on hold if you meet certain qualifications. And so there's just some of those types of things that are built into federal loans, and they're nice to have for that reason. Federal loans often come with a bit of a higher interest rate than some of the private loans. That's not always the case, but federal loans are usually somewhere about 7%. And if you get private loans, obviously there's very expensive private loans, but a lot of them you can refinance to a lower interest rate. But private loans don't come with a lot of those things. So if you have private loans and you're not able to pay, you're kind of on the hook, and it can be challenging to navigate that situation. And so I think as you are thinking about the loans that you need and what type of loans you're going to get, I think it's important to first ask yourself how much money you're going to need. So make a budget is going to be the first thing. And I think that's a really important part of this is being good with budgeting and being intentional with how you spend your money. And then I think to kind of looking at beyond your tuition, what kind of living expenses you're going to have, and that can be included in that budget. And then do you have other options that won't require you to take out loans for some of those things? And you know, if you can look for scholarships, if you can look for tuition assistance through other programs, some people go through the military, some people go through you know, underserved community type programs, and there's a whole bunch of different things out there. And so I would say try to look for other options besides loans that you can get to help subsidize your medical education, and then really spend some time thinking about the type of loans you're getting and why you're getting them. I don't know if that answers your question.
That did, for sure. I think I would say most people in my class, including myself, took out federal loans, and then there were maybe 3 to 4 people who got scholarships through the military. And then there's some people in my class, I don't know if this is just like an Arizona thing, or actually, no, I think there's a national one where it's like a primary care kind of scholarship mm-hmm. where you commit mm-hmm. to primary care specialty, and then you get your medical school paid for. And then obviously you might have to just do some internet searching if you want to find like other types of scholarships that maybe mm-hmm. apply to like your community that you grew up in or mm-hmm. your ethnicity or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I think the way that you laid it out made a lot of sense too.
Medical student struggling with writing a personal statement, having the worst writer's block and don't know where to start? Want to make sure you write a personal statement that stands out? I have great news for you. My own personal statement landed me 8 medical school interviews, and I put all my knowledge into a free training all about how to write a unique medical school personal statement. Head to my website www.heykellyellen.com and click on the words free personal statement training to watch the video today. It's free, so what are you waiting for?
So one of the things that you talked about was making a budget, and I just wanted to ask you, like, how do you recommend people go about do this? Like, use an Excel sheet? Are there websites that you recommend for someone who maybe has never made a budget before? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, that's a really good question. I think that a budget doesn't have to be complicated. There are several different types of budgets. There's something called a zero-based budget, which essentially you give every single dollar a job. Is kind of how you'll hear people describe it. And so before you move forward in spending anything, every dollar is assigned somewhere. And so you can kind of have a big picture of exactly where you're going to go with that money as it comes in. There's an envelope system. So you can, you know, if you get paid, or if you're in this situation of being in medical school and you have a loan disbursement or whatever, you can put that money in cash, put it in an envelope. And when that envelope is empty for that category, say you eating out or whatever the case may be, you don't spend any more from that envelope unless you take from another envelope. And zero-based budgets and envelope budgeting are kind of similar in that way. One's just kind of physical money and another is kind of a representation on a spreadsheet. But, mm-hmm. And then there's other ways to just divide it up into percentages. Whatever percentage of my income is coming in this month, I'm going to put 50% towards living expenses. I'm going to put 30% towards saving and investing, and I'm put 20% towards, things that I want or whatever the case may be. And, the easiest place to start, I think, is honestly just looking at maybe 2 to 3 months of your last bank statements and categorizing your expenditures according to different categories and kind of developing a system of, all right, these are the categories that I tend to spend money in. And then developing a way to say, okay, it looks like over the last 3 months, I've spent, $400 a month on groceries. So next month I'm going to budget $400 for groceries. And kind of just looking at your historical spending and applying it to a future budget. And then obviously, as you move forward, you can adjust those categories and say, I've realized that maybe I only need $300 for groceries a month, so I'm going to put $100 somewhere else. And so, but I think the place to start is kind of reviewing your expenditures over the last, at least 3 months probably, so you can kind of get a average representation, and then developing your budget categories from there. And then kind of developing a projection and adjust as you go on. And soon, after a couple of months, you'll really get the hang of it and start seeing like, oh, actually I'm spending more money here than I thought I would. So I need to borrow from this category and budget differently next month. So that's kind of the approach that I would take personally.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. From what I heard you saying, it sounds like there's really no one right way to go about
Absolutely
it.
Correct.
There's many right ways. And I think that a lot of medical students or pre-meds, we're kind of obsessed with the idea of perfection, mm-hmm. and it has to be perfect. We have to know where every dollar is going, or we have to have the perfect spreadsheet. Mm-hmm. And it's all of those ideas of perfection are kind of stopping people from starting or kind mm-hmm. of even looking at your bank statements, mm-hmm. and seeing where your money is going, because I know sometimes people are too scared to even look because they're oh, I spent too much money at mm-hmm. Starbucks or whatever mm-hmm. it may be. Mm-hmm. But it sounds like there's just so many options. And if you try one way of budgeting and it doesn't work for you, then maybe try a different way the next month.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
For sure.
There are really easy ways to do it. If you want to build your own spreadsheet with your own categories, or if you want to use an app, if you want to use Mint or you need a budget, or a couple apps that are well known, there's lots of options out there. And, like you said, I think it's getting started and then finding something that works for you. And it's okay if it doesn't work for you the first time. There's lots of other options out there.
Definitely. Okay. So we kind of talked a little bit about maybe the pre-med / beginning medical student journey when it comes to money with loans and with making a budget and getting through medical school. So now let's focus on maybe someone in my position who is about to graduate or maybe someone who's an intern or starting mm-hmm. residency. What advice do you have now when it comes to looking at paying back the loans or even getting started to think about how you're going to tackle them? Mm-hmm. I know for me, I've been looking at income-based repayments and maybe PSLF, and mm-hmm. those words maybe have no meaning to some people. Mm-hmm. So if you could break down kind of what that means in simple terms, so that everyone can understand kind of the options for them.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll do my best. So I think as you're approaching loan repayment, you have a few options. So if you have federal loans, I think that one really great place to start is going to the studentaid.gov website, and they have a loan calculator, and you can kind of plug some numbers in there and kind of get a sense of the options available to you, the different repayment plans, what that would cost, different approaches. There are lots of details around some of the payment plans, and it can be very intimidating. But the basics are you can pay in a standard repayment plan, which basically says if you have X amount of money, you're going to pay it back in X amount of years, usually 10 years for the standard repayment plan. And you're going, so you divide that up into, you know, whatever divided by 120, and that's going to be a payment every month. Most people, especially in residency, can't afford that because we have, you know, $250,000 of loans. And so that's where the income-based repayment works. And essentially, the loan servicer takes your discretionary income. They have formulas to calculate kind of what your discretionary income is. And you'll have to file this information either based on if you're married filing jointly, if you're married filing separately, or if you're single, they'll kind of take your tax status into that and the income that you've earned in the last few years, and they'll calculate what your discretionary income is. And then you pay a percentage of your discretionary income towards your loans. And public service loan forgiveness is kind of one way of getting your loans taken care of. So essentially the way that works is that you work for a qualifying organization for 10 years, usually a nonprofit or government organization. And if this is something you're interested in, you should definitely look into the details because there's very specific requirements around it. But if you're in an income-based repayment plan and you're working for a required organization or a qualifying organization for 10 years, then you get your loans forgiven essentially tax-free. And so that's one approach to getting things taken care of. If you are someone who is in residency and working for a nonprofit or a qualifying organization during your time in residency, your time in residency counts towards that. And I think that's something that a lot of people don't think about. So you know, whatever your specialty is, if it's a 3-year training program, if it's a 6-year training program, you know, those 3 or 5 or 6 years, whatever it is, count as long as you're in an income-based repayment plan and working for a qualifying organization. So if you're in a 6-year training program, you could graduate and have, you know, 4 years left of loan repayment to take care of it. I think that if you're someone who is going to be in a training program and come out with a very high earning specialty, in some cases, it might be worth it to think about refinancing your loans to a lower interest rate. So as we discussed earlier, the federal interest rate is somewhere around 7%. You can find refinance options that are much, much lower than that. And so if you're someone who's going to be, you know, earning a fair amount of money and in one of the higher paying specialties and you just want to throw all your money at it and get it taken care of, you know, having a lower interest rate is going to help you with that. That said, when you're refinancing, you lose a lot of the federal protections, quote unquote, that we discussed earlier. And so just being mindful of you know, what comes along with refinancing into a private type situation from a federal type situation.
Definitely. Sorry if I cut you
off. No, that's it. That's it.
Okay. yeah, it seems like there's just a lot of options. Like when you're about to graduate or even when you're doing residency and you're thinking about it. And I think kind of the way that you broke it down was like amazing where you kind of like laid out like each option, like each path that you can take. And that's kind of what you have to do with, like, I've kind of learned, like, you have to kind of project into the future. Okay. Like in 10 years, like this is how I'm planning on paying it. Or like in 10 years, I'm gonna, like first I'm going to do income based repayment and then I'm going to refinance or whatever like your plan is for your loans. Like there's not really like a one size fits all because it depends on how many loans you have and also like what specialty you're going to go into, like how much money you're going to be earning after. So like you said, there's like many different options and you kind of have to do a little bit of research to figure out what would be best for you. So thanks for breaking that down.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it is very much a personal thing and does take some time and intentionality to do a little bit of research. And yet, unfortunately, there's not kind of a one size fits all. But I think that, you know, having a basic understanding of where you see yourself going and your goals, I think is going to be helpful in that process. And recognizing that you do have options and that there's not just one way to do it.
Yeah, definitely. So I got some questions from my followers on my page about personal finance things. And I figured if people ask these questions, other people would have questions like this. So one of the questions I got was, how to plan for retirement when you have a low income and residency and then you have loans afterwards? Mm-hmm. What would you, what advice would you give to this person?
Yeah, I think that's a really great question. I think one of the adages that you'll hear people say in personal finance is that personal finance is personal. And so it's, you know, everybody's situation is a little bit different. And so while it's difficult to give individual advice, I think my general framework is to approach things in kind of a stepwise manner. And so I think one of the first keys is one, developing an emergency fund. That should be one of your first priorities, because as you are paying off debt, if you were to have an emergency come up, you want to have some money that is set aside in order to be able to take care of that emergency without going further into debt. And so as you're developing your budget, if you're able to, you know, save, I don't know, $20 a month, $50 a month to put aside to an emergency fund, if you can save $80 a month ish, about $85 a month, you'll get to $1,000 emergency fund in a year. And be able to have that money to put aside. And so that would be one of my first priorities, is kind of just finding money to be able to put aside in case of emergency. And then secondly, if you, and a lot of people in med school, this isn't so much the case, it's more student loan debt that's the issue. But if you have any sort of federal, any credit card debt, that's something that you need to deal with very, very quickly. And you should be dealing with that before you think about investing or anything like that, because that credit card debt is very high interest rate and can be very expensive in the long run.
Yeah.
So dealing with that quickly, I think, is really important. And then thirdly, the way to really start thinking about, setting yourself up for retirement is, one, many programs offer a 401k. So make sure that you're participating in that at least up to the amount that your program will match. And the way a 401k works is essentially a program will say, or an employer, if you're in the private sector, will say, we'll match up to 5% of your income as far as contributions go to your 401k. So if you put 5% every month, we'll match it up to 50% or 100%, or it differs from institution to institution. But so at least contributing up to the level of the match, that they'll match you, and that's free money that you're getting from your program.
So nice.
And so that can be a really effective way, even with a small amount of money, to kind of start building for retirement. And then I think for trainees, another really helpful account to consider is a Roth IRA. And you can contribute up to about $6,000 per year in a Roth IRA, which I know sounds like a lot to people in training. But you don't have to contribute that much, but it's a place to start. And the reason that I think a Roth IRA is really great for trainees is, one, you're not making as much income as you will in the future. And there is a certain point at which you are not allowed to contribute to a Roth IRA anymore when your income reaches a certain level. And Roth IRAs are really wonderful for a couple reasons. One, the money that you contribute to them grows tax-free in the account. And then when you take it out in retirement, it's tax-free. So you don't pay taxes on it when you take it out. So if you are, making, $60,000 a year in residency, you're going to be at a much lower tax bracket than you will 20 years from now working as an attending. And, and maybe even at a lower tax bracket than you will be in retirement when you're taking that money out. So you have to decide when you want to pay taxes on it. And I think for most people in training, now is kind of be the best time to pay taxes on that money, because it's your lowest income. Obviously everybody's circumstances differ, but so I think that's another really great option for trainees is a Roth IRA and taking some time to do some reading and research on that. As far as finding the money, again, I think it comes back to budgeting. And if you can find ways to say, hey, I can spend less here in order to put a small amount here, even if it's $20 a month, that's something, and it grows.
Definitely.
And I think a lot of people feel overwhelmed and kind of, like they're not able to do anything because they don't have enough. It has to be a big amount that I'm contributing, and it doesn't. It's about building habits of contributing and investing and saving for retirement. And as your income grows, so can your contributions. So
Definitely. And can you... I made $20,000 my first year as a part-time influencer and full-time medical student. I honestly had no idea how lucrative a career in influencing could be until I started. If you have dreams of having a side hustle as an influencer, you should check out my ebook, The Part-Time Influencer. We cover how to start an account, how to grow a following, and most importantly, how to work with brands and make money. Head to www.heykellyellen.com and click on the Part-Time Influencer ebook in the top banner. I'm so excited for you to get started. Can you tell people a little bit about like how to like actually like logistically set up a Roth IRA? Like, is it with a bank? Like, what, where do you go to do that for like complete beginners?
Great question. So you can open a Roth IRA with all kinds of companies, but I am a big fan of something called low cost index funds. It's essentially kind of a collection of stocks and it seeks to kind of mimic the a specific index, say the S&P 500, which is a kind of a, one of the markets. And you can find these types of index funds in a variety of companies, but one of the, a few of the best companies, the most affordable companies are Vanguard, Fidelity, Schwab. Those are three places that you can open a Roth IRA and find very affordable index funds to invest in. If you want something that's a little less or a little more hands-off, something that you just kind of give them an idea of what you, how you want to balance your money, you can use a robo-advisor like Betterment or Wealthfront. And you answer a few questions and they'll kind of set, you know, your balance of stocks and bonds for you according to your goals. And they'll charge a little bit more of a fee for that, but it's not that bad. And you can open a Roth IRA with them as well. And so if you want to be a little more hands-on, something like Vanguard, Betterment, Fidelity, if you want to be a little more hands-off, something, Vanguard, Schwab, Fidelity, if you want to be a little more hands-off, Betterment, Wealthfront are really great places to start.
Thank you. That was so helpful. And I know like when I heard about like, or at least like on TikTok, I don't know, I've been seeing like a lot of people like talk about Roth IRAs. Mm-hmm. And like at first I was like, what is that? And like people don't explain like the basics of it. Like, mm-hmm. And I feel like you like broke it down like with the basics. And I feel like that is going to help people actually like know exactly like what to do and like what steps to take if they are interested in opening up a Roth IRA. So now that we talked a little bit about kind of investing and mm-hmm. all of that, people wanted to know, like, how do you know where to invest or like how to even start investing? Like when you're first starting out, like you've mm-hmm. never done it before mm-hmm. at all. Do you know like any resources? Like, did you just go on Google and type mm-hmm. in like how to invest? Like what advice do you have for people?
Yeah, I think that's a very good question. Investing is, it can be very intimidating. And I think that a lot of people think that it has to be complicated and it really doesn't. So kind of going back to where we're talking about, if you want to find something that's very simple, you have a couple options. So one, you could open an account with something like Vanguard and you could invest in a target date fund. And so a target date fund is essentially, you say, I anticipate retiring in the year 2060, for example. And so what that target date fund is you put some money in there and they invest it for you in a collection of stocks and bonds. And mm-hmm. the idea is that over time, you have less exposure to risky assets like stocks and more exposure to more conservative assets like bonds. And the target date fund kind of makes that adjustment for you as you get closer to retirement. And so it's a really easy way to just put money into a target date fund. It's pretty low cost and let someone else kind of do that adjusting of your, and rebalancing of your portfolio for you over time. Yeah. Similarly, you could go to Betterment or Wealthfront again, or you know, kind of robo advisors and kind of fill out a few questions and they'll help adjust that asset allocation. I think we use a lot of big words like asset allocation and stocks and bonds, and you hear those words thrown around a lot. But to break it down very simply, like when you're investing, you're trying to find a balance between risk and reward. And so there's kind of a spectrum of things that are more risky, but potentially more rewarding, and things that are less risky, but therefore a little bit less rewarding. And if you're looking at like cryptocurrency or sometimes even individual stocks, those are on the more risky spectrum. If you're looking at it like a savings account, that's on the most conservative spectrum. And then index funds are kind of, they can be anywhere on that spectrum. And essentially, it depends on what they're made up of. So you can have an index fund, again, that tracks an index like the S&P 500. And basically, it says this index fund is composed of 500 of the biggest companies that make up the S&P 500. And so we have a little bit invested in all of those. And so that's a really easy way to get some exposure. And then there's bond funds, which target bond indexes. And so you kind of have to find that balance between risk and reward. And there's some really great resources out there. Vanguard, for example, also has an asset allocation. And basically, asset allocation is how you distribute your money according to that risk reward spectrum. Vanguard has a really great asset allocation tool that you can go in, answer a few questions, and they'll say, we recommend that you put this much money in stocks, this much money in bonds, this much money in cash, and kind of help balance those things for you based on your risk tolerance, your timeline, the time at which you think you're going to need that money. And kind of that can be a really great way to start as you're learning and kind of help you start somewhere. And as you learn, you can make more decisions according to your own values, but it can be a really easy way to get started.
That's so nice that it, like, there's part of it where it kind of like, there's like a questionnaire almost, it seems like, there you kind of fill out what your goals are, and then it can like make recommendations for you. So it doesn't feel like you have to be like the complete expert when it comes to investing. And what would you say to people, like, because a lot of people who follow me are students or, you know, they're in their early 20s. What would you say to the people who say, well, I'm not making six figures, like I can't invest? Like, what would you say to those people?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. So I think when it comes to investing, you are finding a balance. You either have to have a lot of money if you don't have very much time, or you have to have a lot of time if you don't have very much money. And the combination and the balance of those two things are what builds wealth. And so if you're someone who is in their 20s, you have a lot of time, which means you don't necessarily have to have a lot of money. And so you can start putting money aside now, and that money has 20, 30 years to grow, and can grow quite a bit in 20 to 30 years. And the idea being that as your income increases, so do your contributions towards your investments and your retirement. And so don't discount the importance of time. So even 20, 50, 100 bucks a month is going to go a very long way for you in the long run, because you have time on your side. If you're someone who is later to the game, late 30s, 40s, you know, it's never too late to start. But if you're someone who's later to the game, you're going to start having to think about getting more money in there, because you have less time on your side. And so I think that thinking about it in those terms is kind of an easy way to break it down. And so for the people who are worried about it in their early 20s, just start somewhere, even if it's a small amount, and time will do a lot of work for you.
Yeah, that's the way that you said that was like so perfect for sure. Like, you have time on your hands and you don't have to be like an expert at it yet. Like, you don't have to put in like 100K to invest to start either. Like, you can even just start small and learn as you go. And then as you learn more, you can invest more as well too.
Yeah.
So something else that I wanted to talk about, when it comes to like personal finance and money in general, is that I think there kind of is like a mindset issue with money. Like, there can be like shame and embarrassment when it comes to money. Maybe people grew up in a low income household and they never felt like they had enough money growing up. So then now when they're in a high earning career, they kind of take that mindset with them. Mm-hmm. How would you counsel people who maybe have struggles with their mindset with money?
Yeah, excellent question. I think that there absolutely is a lot of taboo and shame around money. And I think personal finance is, much like medicine, has kind of been a patriarchal type of field where, you know, the older white men tell the rest of the people exactly what they need to be doing. And, you know, it's too complicated for you to understand, so just let me do it for you. Okay. And I think that what we're starting to see in the personal finance world is kind of a democratization of personal finance and people recognizing that actually it's within their power to make decisions for themselves and it's within their power to manage their money responsibly and not depend on someone else to do it for them. And so I think with similar to medicine in many ways, I think with that kind of patriarchal approach to money, there's a lot of shame that comes from that. And I think that, you know, in medicine, traditionally, there's kind of been this approach of, you know, you made a bad choice, so now you're sick or whatever the case may be. Thankfully, that's changing. But I think that it's been similar in personal finance. And so I think that recognizing that, one, we all make mistakes, no one is perfect, and you have permission to learn and grow. Yeah. And the important thing is that we learn from our mistakes. And I have made so many mistakes when it comes to money. And I think that being able to say, look, because I made a mistake doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't mean I'm incapable. I am very capable and I'm going to do it better next time. And I think that being able to talk about it openly with people is also important. I think that, you know, things are starting to change where people are willing to talk about their salaries with each other. And, you know, people are willing to talk about how much things cost and, you know, I spent this on this, you know, and kind of have that open discussion around money. And I think as that changes, some of the taboo around money will also change. And so, yeah, my thought would be just don't let shame get in the way of learning and growing and give yourself permission to make mistakes and learn from them.
Yeah, you said that so well. And I think especially like in medicine, we're so used to like having to be like the expert at something. And we spend like our whole life studying to be the expert in, you know, the career that we pick in medicine. Mm-hmm. And then it can feel like embarrassing when you kind of are the beginner at mm-hmm. something else mm-hmm. again, and you don't know a lot about how to handle your finances because you maybe just never spent the time to like mm-hmm. learn about it. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, having like the, like not feeling shameful about it and just even being willing to kind of like be a beginner and like learn about it. Like it sounded like at the very beginning of the episode, like you said, you just like had an interest and then you learned and now mm-hmm. like look at you now. So thank you for sharing about that. And I also just wanted to tell my audience that you are literally like so helpful on your Instagram page, like the posts that you make. I learned so much. You break things down in like such a simple way. And also like some, like I often like ask you questions like in the comments or like DM you and you reply right away and you don't make me feel stupid. So please tell everyone, I know that you're working on a course and please tell everyone a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's in the works. It's been challenging to find the balance between being in fellowship training and working on a course, but I'm working on developing a course about things that I wish I knew when I was in med school and in residency. And so the idea is to help people develop financial literacy and kind of break down some of these things we've been discussing in a little bit more detail and help people kind of, one, have a basic understanding of personal finance and what's out there. And then two, have some actionable steps to kind of get started on their personal finance journey. And so it's in the works and hopefully within the next few months will be coming about. So
everyone needs to like get this course in the future and tell everyone where they can find you on social media so that they can stay updated with your posts and also know when the course is going to be launching.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm most active on Instagram at Simple Finance Community. I try to post pretty regularly on there, and I do a little bit on Twitter and TikTok, but not very much. So Instagram's probably the best bet. And yeah, definitely would love to meet y'all there. So
perfect. I will also put your Instagram in the show notes of the episode, so everyone can go click on it and ask him all your, please don't ask me any personal finance questions because I'm going to send you to him. So I just wanted to thank you so, so much for coming on the episode today and talking with me. I even learned like so much today, and I know everyone else is going to learn the same. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me. It's been really wonderful to be here. And yeah, thank you so much.
Of course.
And now for my favorite part of the episode, where I sit down with my boyfriend, Jarrett, and we talk about topics that you want us to cover as a couple in medicine.
Take us away.
Money.
I told Jarrett this episode, we talked all about money, and he knew exactly how to start
Apprentice
it.
Theme.
It's the Apprentice theme?
Yeah, I didn't even realize that until I had to look it up, and all I was finding was Money, Money, Money by ABBA. So
so there you go. We dove right in.
Must be funny. Yeah, we're diving right in.
Diving right in. So I kind of suggested, since I spent so long talking about advice with money and budgeting and loans.
She'd bring in the Dutch boyfriend to talk about it. Very Dutch people.
I was like, why don't we talk about money? Because this is more of an unfiltered look into it. And yeah, so we'll see how on track we stay, honestly. But yeah, that is what our goal is, at least.
Mm-hmm.
So
where to begin?
Where to begin? So I think the first thing that I wanted to talk about is kind of a little bit about kind of your, like, how you kind of grew up viewing money. Like, because I think money can actually be like a very emotional topic for people.
Oh, yeah.
And like, I kind of realized even like talking about it on Instagram, like some people like don't want to talk about earning money at all. And some people like want to talk about it. Some people are like saying like, I'm earning $1 million a year. And like, they're just telling everyone. There's a huge spectrum.
Yeah.
So with you, how would you say you kind of view it?
I mean, my upbringing, I was raised in, you know, middle class, upper middle class. We never had any need for money, but we oftentimes scrimped and saved no matter what, you know, depending on what you were interested in buying.
Yeah.
If it was something collectible, then, you know, my father had no issue spending money on it. But, you know, we're not getting the name brand cereal. We're going off brand. It doesn't taste that much different, you know.
Yeah.
It's odd where you choose to scrimp and save and where you choose to spend your money. You know, everybody's got the different things that they want and don't need. But, you know, we're very, you know,
I would
Dutch,
say we,
you know,
both,
as what we've always called it, it's just Dutch, you know.
Yeah, like, don't get me wrong, we both grew up very privileged, like, we're very thankful, like,
yes,
I want to like recognize that, obviously. Like, we weren't like living on food stamps or like afraid of being homeless ever or anything like that. But just because you didn't live like in that kind of setting doesn't mean that you couldn't have a positive or negative view on money, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so I think, like, similarly, my family would kind of, if we were going to spend money, it was, like, towards, like, education. Mm-hmm. More. I remember
Like, I didn't know, like, any brand names growing up because, like, we never bought anything, like, brand name, like, or, like, designer.
Yeah.
Like, I remember I really wanted UGG shoes when I was, like, in middle school because they were so popular.
Yeah.
And my mom bought the, like, off-brand, like, Payless shoes ones.
Well, I mean, if this tells you anything, like, we used to go to TJ Maxx and Marshall all the time. These are my favorite stores. And, like, what's my favorite store today now?
Same. Oh, Ross?
Yes, Ross. Ross Dress for Less. It's great. It's like a garage sale at all times,
I
you
think
know.
You, we go to
how
Marshall's
many Rosses
more.
Did we, how many Rosses did we go to before our trip to Colorado?
A lot.
It was at least a dozen different Rosses. Anytime we saw one, I'm like, oh, we got to stop.
Yeah. No, we go to Marshall's so much
yeah,
more
Marshall's
now.
Is, well, that's because we live across the street from a Marshall's, but.
Yeah, that's
well, I
true.
Do, but.
Yeah, you do. That's true. So, anyways, I think at least I felt like I had a kind of responsible upbringing when it came to money, at least.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, I feel like I also didn't have any education about, like, what to do with money or, like, how to invest money. Like, I very much had, like, a very traditional, like, you are going to, like, study hard, and then you will get a good job, and then you will make money, and then you will retire. And that is
that's
not
all,
the only
I mean,
way.
It needs to be, you know, there needs to be some kind of high school education about,
yeah.
like, paying taxes, you know, balancing a checkbook, and all this other stuff. And they're just non-existent. You know, my parents, they were nice enough, you know, they set me up with a small bank account, you know, and then I put my allowance in there and save up, you know, so you learn saving as a kid, and that's always good.
Yeah,
but
that's important for sure.
But again, the first time I had to do my taxes by myself, I was like drowning.
Yeah, or just even like learning that you're never going to become like extremely wealthy just by like trading your time for money, like mm-hmm. because you only have so much time in the day, right?
Yeah.
And
we're all underpaid, so.
And we're all, you know, we're all underpaid. We only can work so many hours a week, so you have to learn how to get your money to work for you, whether it's through investing in the stock market or investing in real estate or having a side hustle or something like that, which, mm-hmm. I don't do any of that yet, but, like,
you have a side
I
hustle.
Hope to. I have a side hustle. Yeah, you're right. That's what I do have. But, mm-hmm. like, I hope to in the future, like,
and you
learn.
Might have some real estate soon.
I know. Yeah, but that's not investing. That's like buying a place to live.
It's also an investment, though.
Yeah, that's true.
You can rent a place to live, but you have no equity there. So
that's true. So small steps. But like, it's kind of like bad that the first time I learned about like a Roth IRA was like through social media.
Yeah, TikTok.
Yeah. I was like, what is that?
Yeah, I mean.
Like, did I you mean, have you ever heard? Had you
yeah,
heard
I had
of that
heard
before?
Of it, but
oh,
I had no idea
I
what
hadn't.
It was. You know,
yeah,
you hear the terms when you're around your parents, but like never question.
Yeah,
a kid wants to know what a Roth IRA is. I got
exactly.
a 401k, but you know, you get that with work and just
yeah.
by signing up. So, you know, I'm sure as a resident, you'll probably be able to set up a 401k.
Yeah, and you have to like do a. Like
a percentage that you
percentage
put in.
Match
a lot of times,
and
a lot of times companies will match a certain percentage, you know, which
yeah.
is very nice.
Mm-hmm. That's true. But I don't know. I just feel like also I talked about this earlier, where I feel like there can be a lot of shame around like money too. And like the knowledge of it, because like, especially with like, you or I, like, we're both, like, in, like, good jobs. Like, we both have studied really hard. And then it can feel, like, shameful if, like, you're kind of, like, starting from the beginning, like, learning, like, how to do something, like, what Roth IRA is or something. Like, you are,
yeah,
like, constantly.
Stressful. You always feel
yeah.
like you're behind
exactly.
the game, too, because, you know, you're 27 finding out about this, you know, and they're like, oh, well, if you had started it when you were 22, it'd be already be here. And you're like,
yeah.
oh, well, I didn't know about that.
Exactly.
TikTok wasn't big then.
TikTok didn't exist.
Also, I probably shouldn't be taking all my financial advice from TikTok.
No, actually, though. That's
yeah, seriously.
No. But that's something that, like, we've talked about, too. I was like, we need to start, like, opening up a Roth IRA. And, like, we need to think about, like, in the future, like, investing in real estate and like also like while there can be shame and stuff, I think on the other hand, like I'm trying to think of it as like something that's like fun or like different than my normal like job, like my medical job, because it's like a different way to like use my brain a little bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, so now that we covered that, the second exciting thing is that.
Because the first was so exciting. The real exciting thing.
Now that I made Jarrett talk about his emotions, psychiatrist what? Kelly.
Emotions? We're talking about money.
Yeah, but I was like, shame, guilt. That's an emotion.
I know Dutch have a lot of shame and guilt around their money. But no, the big news is we actually made an offer on a place and they countered with an insulting offer and then we countered back expecting to hear nothing from them and they accepted it beyond all disbelief.
We were so surprised.
I was looking at apartments all day because I'm like, there's no way we're getting this place, so let's just rent. And then all of a sudden they accepted.
Yeah.
So we are under contract currently, getting inspections done, barring any issues.
I know.
Might be homeowners.
It's kind of scary to say this because, like, it's not 1,000% official yet, but it's moving in that direction, at least.
It is, you know. And if there's big issues, then
at least we caught them early. And
we're avoiding them. We haven't paid everything yet. So, yeah, we'll figure it out as we go along.
Yeah.
That's how all of us millennials do it now.
Yeah, our realtor was like, I'm going to, like...
I'll hold your hand through it all. I'll set up your inspections tomorrow.
Yeah, and we've just been relying a lot on, like, family, too, to help us.
Yep.
Using all of our resources.
So with their knowledge, at least.
Yeah, with their knowledge, at least. So. Well, that's another thing that I wanted to talk about is, like, I feel like you're very good at like budgeting and like saving and stuff like that. Like what advice do you have for people when it comes to that?
For budgeting and saving?
Yeah, you're really good at that.
I've saved enough over the last few years so we can actually put a down payment on this place.
Yeah.
The big thing is you don't want to spend more than 20 to 25% of your income, you know, monthly on your housing. You know, try and stay under 25% if you can. And, you know, putting a certain amount into your savings out of your paycheck immediately. You can set it up so some's immediately transferred, you know. I like to do about 10%. And don't treat yourself. You know, I'm big on checking all the ads at the grocery stores to know what's on sale and meal planning around that a lot of the time. And if you live near your parents, you know, I did for a little while, you know, do your laundry there, take any free meal you can get, you know.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of mooching goes a long way.
You need to save money. Like I like there's no shame in like living at home or like getting a roommate, stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I feel like you are very good at, like, saving and being smart with your money. And then also I was going to say that, like, at the beginning you were like, don't treat yourself. But I think, like, you have to decide, like, what's worth it to, like, treat yourself
with. If you hold off treating yourself for long enough, then you can treat yourself.
Yeah. So, like, for me at least, like, I think I pretty much, like, any, like, big purchase I make is, like, honestly, like, flight tickets or, like, hotel stays.
Yeah. Or if I'm getting something specific from, like, me that I want, say I'm getting a new computer or something, I actually put usually at least a month or more of research into it. I look at prices everywhere else. I look at coupons. I see, like, what holidays come up, other sales. It's, like, no purchase that I want is made, like, quickly or in earnest. It's usually, like...
Yeah.
A research project.
Unless Metric texts you that a limited
edition. Well, yeah, limited edition vinyl comes out.
Vinyl's coming out fast. Then it's within 2 seconds. It's bought.
Well, yeah, the heart starts pounding. You know? Well, literally, they were releasing some of these like vinyls that were like live acoustic performances, and there's only like a certain number of them, 250. So they'd send the text. My heart would literally jump to about 150 BPM. And then I'd be like sweating, clicking buttons, trying to buy these. So, you know, if you know you want it, you don't need to do the research, then, you know, treat yourself. But otherwise, research. Find the coupons. You know, use like Honey. That's what I think it's called. That add-on you can get for like your browser.
Yeah.
Searches for coupons. You know, it's great.
And just like not spending money you don't have with credit cards too, I think
that's
is like
a big
trap people fall into.
Yeah. Instead of just paying the minimum on your credit card, you know, pay it off.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, we're not saying like we're perfect at money. Like, we're
No.
We're just trying to like talk about it like in a casual way, honestly. Because I feel like I appreciate it when I hear other people talk about money, even if they're earning like 10 times the amount of money they are, which normally they are, because I'm earning $0 an hour. I'm actually like losing money every day, as a student.
Well, I didn't know I was getting into that.
Okay. That's not true. Cause I do earn money through social media, but like,
okay, warming up
I still am in debt. I'm still in more debt than I am positive.
Don't like that.
Yeah. It's not too late. No ring on the finger must not linger.
You're telling me to run? About to get a house with you, woman.
It's not too late.
I'm in it.
Okay.
I'm in it.
Anyways, so that's the update.
Also, if you're not great with money or you're not making enough, you know, marry yourself a doctor.
Oh my god!
If you get in there early, they'll think it's just, you know, nothing
it's
to do
pure
with
love.
The money, you know, just pure love. So,
okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, I support her for a few years. She supports me the rest of my life.
Did we agree on that?
Once there's a ring on that finger, you better linger.
I don't remember signing a contract saying.
Well, you just signed a contract
that.
With me, you know? You didn't read it. I read it.
I read
you did
the
not
Spark,
read it.
The Spark Notes version.
You did not read it. You skimmed it. You're like, trying to read it.
I hope my lawyer friend does not listen to this right now. I read every line of it.
Jarrett read every
line
of it.
I read every line.
Jarrett gave her the Cliff Notes version, leaving out addendum for caring for me for the rest of my life.
Oh my goodness gracious. This is not where I anticipated this chat going.
Well, you know, money brings out the best and the worst in people.
It really does. It does. Although, surprisingly, when I started sharing about, like, making money on social media, I thought I was going to get, like, a lot of hate comments. But I didn't. I mean, I'm sure people did it, like, in secret. But
I mean,
it's
refreshing that you're so open about it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially like with your advertisements, you're like, you know, like I'm doing this, you know, to help people, but also, you know, it's my only form of income at the time, you know? And
yeah,
like this is the ad. Here's how I got the ad, you know, like,
yeah,
here's how much I made this month. You know, you're very open about it. And I think it's part of what people respect about you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I try to be open and honest, but it's like on one side, it's like awesome. But on the other side, when you're vulnerable, it's so scary
mm-hmm.
because you're like,
I mean, people could
what
look
people
at it as bragging
say?
Instead, but
yeah.
you're literally just trying to be open about it and show people, like, here's how you do it. That's why you have that nice new ebook that's coming out, you know?
Yeah, it's already out.
Oh, it's out.
It's out.
I mean, it's already out, of course. I knew that. I'm on top of things. I've already read it thrice.
You have?
Yes.
Oh, wow, you purchased it?
Quite. Oh, yes, I purchased it.
Oh.
Purchased it three times instead of just reading the same ebook. That I purchased three times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Number one fan over here.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yeah.
But yeah, you guys should definitely go get that book.
Oh my gosh. I didn't
yeah,
even
I'm
pay a, him to say
it.
That. Go to my website.
Ebook. Hey, KellyYellen.com. Is that it?
Yeah.
See, I knew what the website was.
And
no doubt.
You just click on ebook.
And click on ebook. Boom.
Part-time influencer ebook.
Yeah.
It's actually really good because I just released it this week. Okay, well, when you listen to this, it's going to be, like, long. Like, it's going to have already been released for a long time. But this week, I just released it, and I've already gotten messages saying,
saying people have found it really useful, which always makes me so happy.
Yeah, you spent a long time working on it.
I was writing.
A lot of hours in that.
Can I call myself an author now?
For an ebook on how to be an influencer?
Yes.
Okay, step one, first off.
Excuse me.
I'm sure it's much better than that.
It's very good.
Yes.
Anyways.
Of course, I know I've read it thrice.
Yeah, exactly. Clearly, Jarrett's not planning on being an influencer, so none of it applies to him.
Don't got it.
Mm-hmm. But honestly, like, if you want to make money and you also are very busy with like a full-time job or like being a full-time student, becoming an influencer or even just making money online through like coaching or something like that is a lot more profitable than like walking a dog like every week. Like, you can make literally like $1,000 just by posting a picture versus like you'd have to walk a lot of dogs to make $1,000. So that's my pitch. Anyways,
good pitch.
Thank you. I feel like
so many of them targeting that big audience of dog walkers.
Dog walker, like through what is it called? WAG?
There's an app for everything.
There's an app for it. And I know it's not called that because now I'm like, I can't think of it. And people are listening and they're like, it's not called that. But Woof? It's called something with a dog. Like,
isn't that from The Office? You're going to get a fax and an email and a page all at the same time?
Yeah, you're right. Okay, I don't remember what it's called. But there is an app for it where you can walk dogs and get paid for it.
Gotcha.
Which honestly, like, I can see the benefit because you're like outside, you're walking, you're exercising.
You get to interact with other people's dogs, which, you know, who doesn't love a dog? So.
Exactly. So I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm just saying like cost versus time analysis here.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
Yeah. Maybe I'll get your book after we get a cat, you know, since if we get our own place, we'll get a cat and then our cat will have an Instagram. I can run that.
Oh
for
my
it.
Gosh. I literally just
I can be that much of a cat dad.
A TikTok this week about how, like, it was like the very first like line was like how my dog is making me $100,000 this year as an influencer.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
No, people are pet, like, I guess
pet enthusiasts.
Dogs are pet influencers.
Yeah.
And they make $100,000. Which is more than I'm making. So That's kind of sad, but also good for that person. Maybe our cat needs to be a cat influencer. We don't even have a cat. So
it's happening. If the house happens, the cat's happening. That's all the like responsibility I need right now.
As a cat.
Yes, a cat.
Yeah. I've never had a cat, so I'm a little bit hesitant.
I've had one.
But
it's very nice, actually. I was a dog person before I had a cat, and now I'm, you know, both a dog and a cat person, but I think I kind of want a cat more.
Yeah, they're just, I think they're definitely easier to take care of. And that's what I need, at least during residency, is something easy. Yeah.
A little emotional support. Another way of saving money. We don't have any pets. We also don't have any kids.
Yeah. Kids are
big drain
gonna
on
be
the
expensive when it, like in the future. That's for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We talked about money. We did it. We kept like pretty on theme.
I only sang one song about money.
I'm proud of you.
There's a lot of them.
There's a lot. So you resisted. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you so much for tuning into the Honest MD podcast. If you enjoyed this episode or learned something new, I want to tell you about three ways you can support the show and keep the Honest MD going. Number one, subscribe to the podcast so you never miss an episode. You literally just have to hit the subscribe button. It's that easy. Number two, take a screenshot of this episode on your phone, sharing what you loved about the episode, and post it to your Instagram stories and tag me at HeyKellyEllen. And lastly, number three, leave a review. This is the ultimate way to support the Honest MD. You can write something short and sweet like, I love this show, or something longer about things you have learned or appreciated about this podcast. I am not kidding when I say that I read every review and it means so much to me. The more reviews we have means the higher we rank on the podcast algorithm, which means bigger and better guests and episodes. Thanks so much for listening, and see you next week.